Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Again, the magic key turns. The RCA family, including RCA Victor, RCA Radiotron, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, RCA Institutes, and the National Broadcasting Company, all join in presenting a number of Broadway highlights. Those appearing this afternoon include Roland Young, Eleanor Powell, Madame Schumann-Heinck, Joseph Levine, Tom Dorsey and his band, John B. Kennedy, and from Amsterdam, Holland, the new European radio and moving picture star, Joseph Schmidt. Frank Black, director of music for the National Broadcasting Company, leads the NBC Symphony Orchestra in The Waltz from the Sleeping Beauty by Tchaikovsky.
Thank you.
Entertainment has one main street, and radio has opened it to the world. To an artist, Broadway is not a street, it is success. On the European Broadway, there is a new star, Joseph Schmidt. His radio singing inspired the song titled, My Song Goes Round the World. It became the title song of a moving picture in which he was featured. His singing in the picture almost instantly brought him the reputation of being Europe's most popular romantic tenor. This afternoon, he is singing from Holland, and his song really goes round the world as Joseph Schmidt sings Simplicus Waltz by Johann Strauss and My Song Goes Round the World. The magic key of RCA turns to Amsterdam.
The well-known famous tenor, Joseph Schmidt, accompanied by the Harlem Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Pete Tickles, will sing for you the Simplicius Waltz by Johann Strauss. From Hans May's Joseph Schmidt film, My Song Goes Round the World. Joseph Schmidt will sing it in English. I'm sure you like it.
My song will never take my heart away. gonna jump the fence in area. Pathetic, the world, how much I love.
Joseph Smith, the great Tanner, who sent his greeting to America. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
It's been a real pleasure, Mr. Schmidt, to bring your voice to America from Amsterdam, Holland. Our listeners will be interested in knowing that the RCA receiver at Riverhead, which brought in Joseph Schmidt from Amsterdam, was designed by the same engineers that built the new 1936 RCA Magic Brain Radio with magic eye and metal tubes. This new receiving set gives worldwide reception with startling reliability. RCA Victor has discovered a great new dance band for Victor Records. It's under the direction of Tom Dorsey. Tom is famous for his trombone playing. His unusual arrangements of popular music are the talk of Broadway musicians today. As our guest, he is going to do two of the melodies he recently recorded. First, it's Written in the Stars, with Edith Wright singing the vocal. Is more typical of Tom Dorsey. I've Got a Note, with Cliff Weston singing the vocal. Thank you.
I've got a nose. Here is the nose. I didn't choose it, but I'll never lose it while I've got a nose. I've got a nose. Here is the nose. I'm not a liar, it's one octopire, but this is the nose. Oh, look, 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 I've gone on to another one. Do you like this note better than the other one? Back on the nose. Here is the nose. This is the first one, it may be the worst one, but I've got a
How to become a pianist without a piano was the problem that faced Joseph Levine at the beginning of his career. The Levine family lived in a small town close to Moscow. His father was a trumpet player in the Royal Opera, but was too poor to indulge in any luxuries, much less a piano. By chance, a brother-in-law sent them an old square instrument to keep for him rather than store it. With this valuable accessory, the father put his son through a rigid test to ascertain if he possessed any musical qualifications. From that humble start, one of the truly great pianists of today was born. Joseph Levine plays Chopin's Polonaise in A flat.
Thank you.
The magic key of RCA turns to real Broadway to bring you a scene from John Golden's new hit, A Touch of Brimstone, starring Roland Young. RCA Photophone has often brought his voice to you in moving picture theaters. Frank Craven, the famous author and player, who personally directed this comedy for Mr. Golden, is here with us today to introduce the scene. Mr. Craven.
We are going to play a scene from the second act of A Touch of Brimstone with members of the original cast. The Roland Young part, Mark Faber, is a theatrical producer, a brilliant, thoroughly capable man, but very self-satisfied and domineering. He has produced a play that was so well received in New York that he plans to take it to London. He has told his wife, the part played by Mary Phillips, that he doesn't want her to make the trip with him. But even while he's on the high seas, he decides he does need her and cables her to come over on the next boat. So Mrs. Faber sails to join her husband. On the same boat are the actors of the company, the author of the show, the financial backer, and his wife. All of them, thinking Mrs. Faber is sailing contrary to her husband's wishes, ignore her presence. They even go so far as to snub her, believing in their sycophantic minds it'll be something of which Faber would approve. But when they get to London, they find Mrs. Faber being received and treated like a queen by her husband. So Ben Foster, the author, played by Ryder Keene, Isabel Cobb, wife of the co-producer of the play, played by Cora Witherspoon, and Kruger, the stage manager, played by Robert Burton, hasten to make amends for their conduct on board ship by bringing Mrs. Faber gifts. The scene is the Faber apartment in London, where Mrs. Faber is awaiting the arrival of her brother Tommy, played by William Post Jr. As the scene opens, Ben Foster, the author, enters.
Hello, Janet. I just dropped in to bring you this book as a little memento of your first London opening.
Why, that's very thoughtful of you, Ben. Come in.
Ah, good evening, Mrs. Faber.
Well, how do you do, Mrs. Cobb?
My dear, how are you? I just ran up to show you my new frock. My husband likes it. Ben likes it. But I do want a woman's opinion.
Why, it's charming, lovely.
Precisely what I said.
Genet designed it. It was an accident. That is, an inspiration. Oh, Mrs. Faber, you must forgive me. I'm such a sentimentalist. But I found something today that I just couldn't resist for you. Just a little memento.
Why, thank you, Mrs. Cobb. Ben brought me a little present, too.
Did he? Well, now, what a coincidence. There's nothing like a first night to bring people together, is there?
Peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Forgive thine enemies.
I do that all the time, my dear. Don't you?
It's the only way to keep them. What beautiful earrings. Oh, hello, Tommy.
Hello, darling. Gee, I'm glad to see you.
Mrs. Cobb, this is my brother, Tommy Kimball.
Oh, Mr. Kimball, I've heard so much about you. Fancy coming all the way to London to meet you.
Scarcely worth the trip.
Well, Ben, we must run along. We're keeping Mrs. Faber. We're all having dinner together. I told Ma. Au revoir, Mrs. Faber.
Goodbye, Janet.
Dinner with them. Oh, dear. Oh, well, if Mark's accepted.
What's all this? Presents?
Yes. The books from Ben. The earrings are from Mrs. Cobb. I wonder what Kruger will bring.
What's the racket?
Blood money. They cut me dead all the way across the Atlantic.
What for?
For coming to London. You see, in New York, Mark said in front of them that he didn't want me in London. Later, he wired for me to stay with the company, but they didn't know that.
Well, say, they're a fine bunch of...
Oh, it's all too silly. Forget it.
Well, come on in.
Oh, here's Mark now.
Hello, Tommy. Come on
hello.
In, Kruger.
Oh, hello, Tommy.
Hi.
How are you, Mrs. Faber?
She's fine. The Hungarian's bearing gift, Janet. Show what you've got, Kruger.
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing at all. It's just a plate.
Oh, but the sentiment, Kruger. Ben and Isabel brought presents, too.
Really? What do they want?
Say, that's a big plate, Kruger. Covers a multitude of sins.
It's magnificent. I really hesitate to take it.
Oh, no, take it, Mrs. Faber. Take it. Please, take the plate.
Of course she's going to take it. Why shouldn't she? What's the matter with you?
Well, nothing, only I just thought Mrs. Faber might be sore at me.
Sore at you? What for?
I don't know.
Oh, it's all right. It's nothing. Thank you for your plate, Kruger.
Thank you, Mrs. Faber. Thank you for taking it.
There's something phony here.
Yeah, I think I'd better be going over to the theater now.
You hold on. Johnny, what's Kruger done?
Nothing that matters at all.
Will somebody tell me what this Hungarian has done?
Well, Mrs. Faber imagines that I was rude to her.
Imagines?
Well, it was just a misunderstanding. Dinner to the company on board ship.
Mark, will you stop this?
Don't get yourself all worked up, darling. Well, Kruger?
Well, I just asked her not to come to the dinner.
You what?
Yeah.
Janet, he asked you not to come to this dinner?
But I didn't want to go to the dinner.
Well, I didn't mean anything. You see, it was Ben Foster's idea. He was afraid Mrs. Faber would hear about the dinner and come to it.
This is getting better and better. Go on.
Well, Foster told me to tell her it was just for the company. You see, Mrs. Cobb told him...
Oh, wait a minute. Mrs. Cobb, too, eh?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mrs. Cobb go to the dinner?
Oh, sure, she...
I see. Mrs. Cobb was asked to go to the dinner. Mrs. Faber was asked to stay away. Janet, why didn't you tell me this?
But I don't care. Can't I make you understand? I don't care.
Now, don't get yourself all upset and excited, darling. Please. Tommy, where's Ben Foster?
I don't know. He left with Mrs. Cobb.
Hmm. Operator, give me the Cobb suite, if you please.
Mark, what are you going to do?
Listen, Mr. Faber, I can explain this.
Hello,
to you.
Foster. I want you here at once. We'll get at the facts, yeah?
Oh, is this the time, Mark?
I don't thank you for this, Mark.
Janet, where are you going?
I'm going to dress.
No, you stay here. This is your show.
Hello, did you want me?
Yes. Foster, did you give these earrings to Janet?
Why, no, Isabel did.
This book?
Yes.
Here, take it back. Mrs. Faber doesn't want it.
What's the matter?
Listen, Foster. Kruger tells me you insulted Mrs. Faber on shipboard.
What? You're a liar, Kruger.
Oh, I didn't say he insulted Mrs. Faber. He just told me he didn't want her at the captain's dinner.
I said that. You said that. Now, listen, Mark. Kruger told her he didn't want outsiders at the party.
No, you didn't. You gave her the idea in the first place that she was in the way, tagging along after Mark. You told me you didn't want her in London. You told everybody.
Mark, for the last time, will you stop
wait,
this?
Wait, Janet, wait.
Now, Mark, I give you my word of honor as a gentleman.
Shut up. Come on, both of you. Apologize to Mrs. Faber. Come on, apologize.
Well, I... Sorry, Mrs. Faber.
Why, Janet, this is terrible.
Kruger, you go home and pack. There's a boat leaving in the morning. It's your boat.
Well, Mark, you can't do it. The show, the opening. I got a contract.
Out. Out of the door or the window, you're finished.
Now, Mark, don't act hastily. Kruger surprised me, lying, and... But we need him. We can't let him go.
Foster, I always thought you were a swine. Now I know you are.
Mark!
That's all. You may go now.
Well, I'm sorry, Janet. This must have been a painful scene for you.
Yes, don't prolong it. Get out, both of you. Why did you keep this from me?
Oh, leave me alone.
Good Lord, she's crying.
I'm not crying.
What's the matter with her, Tommy?
Well, she's hurt. That scene, it was a tough spot for her.
Well, they had it coming to them, didn't they? I want her to see them get it.
Oh, Mark, how could you?
Oh, don't you see, darling? Those heels insulted you.
No.
Well, it'll never happen again.
Well, how reassuring.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes.
What's the matter with you?
You made a fool out of me. Down on your knees to Mrs. Faber.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Down on your knees to Mr. Faber, that's what you meant. That's why you made that horrible scene. You didn't care how I felt. You enjoyed it.
Your sister's a strange girl, Tommy.
Mark, take Kruger back.
No.
And Mark, fire him later if you want to, for some other reason.
Nope.
Mark, I don't want to be the cause of any trouble tonight. Now, do this much for me.
All right, well, I'll let him work for tonight, but only tonight. He's taking that boat back tomorrow.
Where are you going?
I'm going down and take another sock at Kruger before I take him back.
It's been a pleasure to have had this touch of Broadway, Mr. Craven. Won't you express our appreciation to Mr. John Golden, Mr. Roland Young, and the other members of the cast? The RCA family includes all divisions of the great field of radio. RCA Victor, for high-fidelity Victor records. There are over 7,000 artists in the Victor Library of Recorded Music. RCA Communications gives instantaneous radio telegraph contacts. Radio Marine speedily relays messages to and from ships. Better radio reception is supplied through the new 1936 RCA Magic Brain Radio with the Magic Eye and metal tubes. And all of these services and products are made possible by RCA Microsensitive Radio Tubes. The magic key of RCA turns, and Frank Black, General Musical Director of the National Broadcasting Company, leads the NBC Symphony Orchestra in Lecuona's brilliant Malaguena. Industry has its Broadway, a show of shows in the New York Automobile Show. It opened yesterday, displaying new designs, new colors, improved motors, greater driving comfort, and previews of the equipment for the future. At this moment in Central Park, our own news commentator, John B. Kennedy, is having a demonstration of one of the new models. Let's talk with Mr. Kennedy. The magic key turns. Hello, John.
Hello, Milton. Here we are, gliding through the twisting terraces of Central Park as if we were riding on air. The park is lovely in its autumn coloring of dun and red and olive green, framed by the tall towers of mid-Manhattan.
Are there many riders, horse riders, on the bridle paths?
Plenty of them, Milton.
You know, I go horseback riding there, John.
Yes, Milton, I saw your horse just now. It's resting up for a month or two.
Uh-oh.
Over there is Al Smith Zoo, thronged by laughing youngsters, and here we go at 40 or 50 miles an hour.
Look out for the traffic cops.
Oh, they don't mind a new car trying out its paces, Milton. This one is typical of the streamlined beauty and silky smooth performance of the new cars. Milton, I wonder, can you fix it for me to talk to one of the automobile executives at the show?
I think so. We have some engineers over there. Oh, Andrew. Andrew. John B. Kennedy's riding through Central Park, and he wants to talk to a motor executive at the auto show. How about it?
Sure, I want to talk to.
Why, Andrew, to Mr. W.R. Tracy. He's executive vice president of the Hudson Motor Car Company. He told me he'd be there this afternoon.
He's right here.
Hello, Bill Tracy.
Hello, John Kennedy.
How does the new automobile show stack up with the last one, Bill?
It's just as far ahead of it as that one was ahead of its predecessor.
At the opening yesterday, it was a brilliant spectacle of animated exhibits. Wait a minute, here's a red light. Gleaming silver and nickel and shining blacks, blues, and other colors of beautiful bodies.
Yes, as a veteran of these shows, I can say that I have never seen a more beautiful exhibit.
But tell me, Bill, Why was the date of the show advanced from winter to fall?
That's simple. It was to spread employment and also to take advantage of a psychological factor in car buying.
I see.
When we held the show in January, there was a longer annual slump in employment between disposing of old inventories and getting ready for the new show. Now we have ample evidence with this new plan that the show in fall stimulates buying. Orders are piling up. People are seeing the wisdom of going into winter with a new, mechanically perfect car.
I should say so. And employment in the automotive industry is bigger and steadier.
Why, yes.
Here we go again. I couldn't help thinking, Bill, looking at the galaxies of cars at the show, how even though the dollar has gone on a diet, the American motor car gives more for the money than ever before.
That's true of all the cars in this show.
About how would you figure it, Bill?
Which way do you mean, John?
Well, I bought my first car for about $1,500, and in those days, you had to pay extra for everything, including the motor. What would $1,000 worth of motor car today have cost you 10 or 20 years ago?
I can be specific. 20 years ago, you would have paid more than $3,000 for what you get in a car for $1,000 today.
That's plenty.
10 years ago, the car that now costs you $1,000 would have cost you more than $2,000. Without a question, today's cars are the biggest automobiles ever priced so low. And, of course, you'll be glad to know our cars are equipped with the newest RCA Victor auto radios.
Well, that's smart, and you'll be glad to know, Bill, that the car I'm traveling through Central Park in is equipped with a new RCA transmitter through which I'm talking to you.
Good.
But, Bill, what, in your opinion, is the outstanding feature of the new show?
Without any question, safety. That's the predominant topic. In this show, more cars than ever before have bodies all of steel. More offer glass that is shatterproof. More have hydraulic brakes. Some even have the double safety of two braking systems from one brake pedal.
There's another red light, Bill, but then stopping takes precedence over speed now.
Oh, not at all, John. Speed can be just as much a factor in safety as brakes are when you have to step out of a jam in traffic.
Just as we did when we started just now.
Right. And steering, too, is made much safer in the new cars with radio safety control that holds the axle in a two arc and free steering from any braking strains.
Well, Bill, about as much as I can understand mechanically is the way a shoehorn works. But these new cars seem to me marvels of design.
And they're marvels in performance, too, John. They fulfill, in my opinion, the ambition of the industry to produce the perfect car to go and the perfect car to stop. What more can anybody want?
Nothing within reason. Success to the show, Bill.
We'll have it. So long, John.
Goodbye, Bill. See you later.
Is that all now, Mr. Kennedy?
Yes, thank you, Milton. From this new 1936 car by shortwave radio, we bid you all good afternoon.
Right now, there's an electric sign on Broadway at 50th Street that reads, Eleanor Powell, the world's greatest feminine tap dancer, starring in At Home Abroad. It's one thing to arrive on Broadway and another to stay on Broadway. Although just a girl, she's a veteran of Broadway and now a star in pictures. Her delightful singing voice and her dancing have been recorded by RCA Victor. Miss Powell is going to do one of the recorded numbers. You are my lucky star from Broadway Melody. Tom Dorsey's band will accompany her.
In my imagination, I live the things I'd like to do. In my imagination, make believe it really. In my imagination, I paint a scene of ecstasy. In my imagination, my hero sings these words to me. Eyes that they were gleaming. I was awestruck. You're all
Farther down Broadway, the street, is the citadel of fine music in America, the Metropolitan Opera House. It has given us the greatest of the great. It has given us one of the most beloved singers of all time, our own Madame Schumann-Heinz.
Don't bother, I'm not singing. I'm talking. I am so very happy to be with you this afternoon. I really love the radio. Radio and moving pictures are the most valuable contributions to human beings, both old and young. It lets people way out in the woods know everything that goes on in the world. In music, news and science. It is wonderful, except when some old crank gets on. But thank heaven, that doesn't happen very often anymore. You know, one time ago, I thought I was popular. But not all the people could come to the opera before. Now, everybody can hear opera, big symphony orchestras, well, all the most wonderful through the radio. Well, it gave me, too, a chance to talk to mothers, to the people, to everyone. It leads to my new moving picture contract. Imagine, I breaking into the movies at 74. Well, never mind. I think radio is most marvelous in the education of children. In a schoolroom, they can look around. Maybe an airplane goes by, or the boys see a pretty girl sitting near him. But with radio, they have to listen, and children learn more through hearing. You know, I had some boys myself. Armistice Day, coming next week, reminds me of it. My boy, they're on both sides. But now with radio, and everybody able to talk to each author and know what the author, Philip, is thinking, maybe there won't be any more war. Let us hope. Certainly people understand things better. They understand music, too, so very much better, and can appreciate it. You don't have to know highbrow music to understand it. I know, because my greatest critic and best critic in the world couldn't read a note. It was only my husband, the father of my children.
All the world is happy when Madame Schumann-Heinz appears. RCA Victor has perpetuated the art of Madame Schumann-Heinz on Victor Records. That's just one of the many functions of the various members of the RCA family. RCA micro-sensitive radio tubes improve the performance of any radio set. The new 1936 RCA Victor Magic Brain Radio has established a new standard for radio performance. RCA Communications takes your radiograms to all parts of the world instantly. Radio Marine carries your messages to and from ships. RCA perfected the manufacturing technique for metal tubes. Metal tubes, the sign of an up-to-date radio set, have already been adopted by 48 radio manufacturers. Now the magic key of RCA turns to a medley of some of the most popular melodies ever played and sung on Broadway. Look for the silver lining from Sally. Kahlua from Good Morning, Dearie. Once in a Blue Moon from Stepping Stones. Can't Help Loving That Man from Showboat. And Who from Sunny. Frank Black leads the NBC orchestra.